Magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Wednesday, December 27th, 2017. Are you discombobulated like me? With Christmas being on Monday, yesterday just seems so out of whack, back to work. So I trust you're getting your footing today. I know the children are loving the time off, but those of us returning to work got to put in our time until the weekend again. Well, on today's edition of Mark and Friends, you're going to continue hearing portions of It's a Wonderful Life, as produced by the Great News Radio Theater Troupe. Today's scenes will include After Dad Dies meeting of the board, Potter voted down and meet the wife scene, Billy overserved, George and mother scene, and Mary and George fighting scene, marriage and run on the bank scene, celebrating at the bank scene, and the romantic honeymoon scene. All right, has been our practice all week long. Thank you, Kathleen, for joining us. I've loved these little readings out of 52 Little Lessons from It's a Wonderful Life by Bob Welch, 2012, Thomas Nelson Publishing. And today I think we're going to learn a little about something that the world needs, but maybe something we wouldn't think about.
The world needs more sentimental hogwash.
Read on.
Potter has no place in his world for sentiment. Greed doesn't mix well with the stuff. Thus, in the scene where George is defending Bedford Falls' need for the building and loan, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter, the crotchety old coot utters the two words, sentimental hogwash. People who lack something in their lives rationalize their okayness by ridiculing that something in others. Without a doubt, the movie is heavily spiced with sentimentalism. But that bothers some people, those with perhaps a touch of Potter in them, and says more about them than the story. On December 22, 2010, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist Paul Greenberg confronted a critic of the movie with the same reasoning. In his newspaper column, syndicated by Tribune Media Services, Greenberg wrote of a college professor who had written that if the movie can be an enriching Norman Rockwell experience, it also can be smothering, where you end up marrying the girl you went to high school with and you never go to Europe. It tells us George is one of the most sad and lonely and tragic characters ever imagined. I cry when I see it. Greenberg's response? Me? I cry for the professor. To me, nothing in the movie seems as sad as the professor's analysis of it. George Bailey as tragic? Come on, wrote Greenberg. Why, he's the richest man in town, as his brother says at the end of the movie. He makes Mr. Potter, the stock plutocrat in the story, look like a pauper. That's because George Bailey has loved and sacrificed and built and given and stood alone a time or two. That is, he has lived. He has not gone through life as a tourist. Never getting to Europe does not strike me as the kind of experience that qualifies for tragedy. Those who find the movie laced with too much sentiment fail to realize that we live in a world with far too little of the stuff. Tender emotions are what connect us with the God who created us and those around us. They're what make us human. But too many people wall themselves away from them, a la Potter, and bravely pretend they're trivial, sentimental hogwash. Deep down, though, it's what we long for, to love and to be loved, to care for others and to be cared for, to serve and to be served. It's what we're made for, relationship. And yes, it necessarily comes with heart tugs, some of joy, some of sorrow. Without it, we are dust. So yes, bring on the sentimental hogwash. It's what reminds us we are, like the Baileys, living room on Christmas Eve, alive.
I wrote down relationships, and you know, that's one of the unique things about the Godhead, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. that there was relationship and love could be fostered between the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit because of that triunity. It's kind of one of those mysteries, but love existed in the Godhead. And one of the reasons I believe God has created man so we could experience his love,
yes,
and have that fellowship,
right,
that relationship. And a lot of this movie, It's a Wonderful Life, is about the relationships that were built and forged through hard times, through good times. Powerful book. Thank you, Kathleen, for another great reading out of this book, 52 Little Lessons from It's a Wonderful Life by Bob Welch, 2012, Thomas Nelson. All right, we'll continue with the Great News Radio Theater Troupe's presentation of It's a Wonderful Life, and I hope you're being blessed by the various broadcasts. They are being archived at greatnewsradio.org, and for a donation, you can have mailed to you the CD, or you could pick it up for that matter at the Great News Radio Center in about 2 or 3 weeks. We're working on getting it all produced and put together, but if you mark on your donation or check, or you call it in and say, I'd love a copy of that, we'll certainly mail that out to you, so a donation of any amount. But ask for the CD, It's a Wonderful Life, produced by the Great News Radio Theater Troupe. All right, now we'll continue with It's a Wonderful Life by the Great News Radio Theater Troupe.
George's father died that night, Clarence, so George couldn't go to Europe. That fall, just as he was ready to leave for college, the directors of the building and loan held a meeting. They were going to appoint a successor.
I want the board to know that George gave up his trip to Europe to help straighten things out here these past few months, and it was greatly appreciated. I think that's all we'll need you for, George. Good luck to you at school. I know you're anxious to make a train.
Yes, I have a taxi waiting downstairs.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to get to my real purpose. I claim this institution is not necessary to this town. Therefore, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to dissolve the building and loan.
It's too soon after Peter Bailey's death to discuss chloroforming the building and loan. His faith and devotion are responsible for this organization.
Oh, I'll go further than that. I'll say Peter Bailey was the building and loan.
Oh, that's fine, Potter, coming from you, considering that you drove him to his grave.
Peter Bailey was not a businessman. That's what killed him. He was a man of high ideals without common sense. And what does that get us but a discontented, lazy rabble instead of a thrifty working class? All because a few starry-eyed dreamers like Peter Bailey stir them up and fill their heads with a lot of impossible hooey. Now I say...
Now, just a minute, Mr. Potter. You're right when you say my father was no businessman. Why he ever started this building and loan, I'll never know. But you can't say anything against his character. Why, in the 25 years since he and Uncle Billy started this thing, he never once thought of himself. But he did help a few people get out of your slums, Mr. Potter. And just remember that this rabble you're talking about do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? My father didn't think so. People were human beings to him, but to you, a warped, frustrated old man, they're cattle. In my book, he died a much richer man than you'll ever be.
I'm not interested in your book.
Oh, well, I've said too much. You're the board. You do what you want with this thing. But just remember that this town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. Come on, Uncle Billy.
Sentimental hogwash. I want my motion.
They're just coming out of the board meeting. I'll have to call you back. What happened, George? All we heard was yelling.
Boy, oh boy, Matilda, you should have heard George.
Yeah, they're voting us down in there.
Yeah, they're putting us out of business. So what? I can get another job. I'm only 52.
You're 58.
George, they voted Potter down.
Oh, B! We're still in business!
Under one condition. That you take your father's place, George.
No, wait a minute. I'm going to college. Uncle Billy here. He's your man.
You can keep him on. That's all right.
I'm going to school. This is my last chance.
But, George, they'll vote with Potter otherwise.
So, George Bailey didn't go to college.
That's right, Clarence. He gave his college money to his brother instead, and waited 4 years for Harry to come back and take over the building and loan. Then he could still see the world.
Gar, she blows. Sam, Billy, you know what the three most wonderful sounds on Earth are?
Breakfast is served, lunch is served, dinner
is
served.
No anchor chains, plane motors, and train whistles. Here's a professor now.
Well, if it isn't George Geographic Explorer Bailey. Uncle Billy, you haven't changed a bit.
Oh, am I glad to see you.
Where's Mother?
She's home cooking the fatted calf. Come on, let's go.
Oh, wait. This is Ruth Dakin.
Ruth Dakin Bailey, if you don't mind.
I wired you. I had a surprise. Well, here she is. Meet the wife.
Well, what do you know? Wife.
Congratulations, Harry. Why didn't you tell somebody? What's a pretty girl like you doing marrying this two-headed brother of mine?
It's purely mercenary. My father offered him a job.
Oh, he gets you and a job? Harry's cup runneth over. Come on, Ruth, let's start ahead and leave the bags for the fellas.
All right.
George, about that job. I never said I'd take it. You've been holding the bag here for 4 years, and I won't let you down.
And that night, the homecoming for Harry became his wedding party, during which Uncle Billy familiarized himself with the spirits.
Oh boy, I feel so good, I could spit in Potter's eye. I think I will, what do you say? Maybe I should go home, if you just point me in the right direction.
Right over there.
That way. Okay, old building and loan pal, I'll see you later. I'm all right.
George?
Out here on the porch, Mother.
Well, how do you like your new sister-in-law?
She's swell.
Looks like she'll keep Harry on his toes.
Yeah, keep him out of Bedford Falls, anyway.
George, do you know Mary Hatch is back from school?
Yeah.
Nice girl, Mary. The kind who will help you find all the answers.
Uh-huh.
Give me one good reason you shouldn't call on her.
Well, Sam Wainwright. Sam's crazy about her.
Well, she's not crazy about him.
How do you know that? Did she discuss it with you?
Besides, Sam's in New York, and you're here in Bedford Falls.
And all's fair in love and war, huh?
I don't know about war.
All right, Mother, I think I'll go out and find the girl and do a little passionate necking.
Oh, George.
Bye, Mrs. Bailey. By the way, do you want any books at the library?
The library? George, you go and see Mary, you hear?
Hello, George.
Hello, Mary. Just happened to be passing by.
Your mother just phoned and said you were on your way.
Well, my mother just called you? How did she know? I just went for a walk and I happened to be passing by. When did you get back?
Tuesday. Would you like to come in?
Well, I guess, since I'm here. Where'd you get that dress?
Do you like it?
It's all right. I thought you'd go back to New York with Sam and the rest of them.
Oh, I worked there a couple of vacations, but I don't know. I guess I was homesick.
Homesick for Bedford Falls?
Yes, and my family and everything.
I still can't understand it, though. I didn't tell anybody I was coming here.
Would you rather leave?
Well, I don't want to be rude.
It was nice about Harry and Ruth, wasn't it?
Oh. Yeah, that's all right.
Don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach.
It's just marriage in general you're not that enthusiastic about?
No, marriage is okay for Harry and Sam and you.
Mary, who are you talking to?
It's George Bailey, Mother.
George Bailey? What does he want?
I don't know. What do you want, George?
Me? Not a thing. I just came in to get warm.
He's making violent love to me, Mother.
You tell him to go right back home. Sam Wainwright promised to call from New York tonight, didn't he?
Your mother needn't... I didn't come here for... To...
What did you come here for?
Oh, you're supposed to be the one who has all the answers. You tell me.
Oh, why don't you go home?
Well, that's where I'm going.
Mary! The telephone! It's Sam.
I'll get it. Hee-haw. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Oh, great. Gee, it's good to hear your voice again, Mary.
Oh, well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam. There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey.
You mean old Mossback George? Hee-haw. Put him on.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll call him. George!
He doesn't want to speak to George.
He asked for him. George, Sam wants to speak to you.
Hello, Sam.
Hey, a fine pal you are. What are you, trying to steal my girl?
Nobody's trying to steal your girl.
Hey, I want to talk to both of you. Tell Mary to get on the extension.
Mother's on the extension.
I am not.
We can hear you. George, put your head a little closer.
Okay.
There. That's better. We're listening, Sam.
I have a big deal coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, you remember that night at Martini's Bar when you told me about making plastics out of soybeans?
Huh? Yeah, soybeans.
Well, my father's checked into it and wants to build a factory outside of Rochester. How do you like that?
Why Rochester?
Why not? Can you think of anything better?
Well, why not right here in Bedford Falls? You remember that old Tool and Machinery Works? You tell your father he can get that for a song, and all the labor he wants, too. Half the town was thrown out of work when they closed down.
That's so. Well, that sounds great. Now, here's the point, George. I have a job for you. Well, that is, unless you're still married to that old broken-down building and loan. Old Mary?
I'm here.
Tell that guy I'm giving him a chance of a lifetime.
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Give me that phone. Now you listen to me, Mary. I don't want any plastics, and I don't want any job. And I don't want to get married, ever, to anyone. Do you understand that? I want to do what I want to do, and you're not going to... Oh, Mary.
George!
I love you.
George, I love you too.
George and Mary were married, and following the wedding and reception, George's old pal Ernie the cab driver drove the happy couple to the train station.
Where are you two off to on this here now, honey?
We're going to shoot the works a whole week in New York, then Bermuda. The highest hotels, the oldest champagne, the richest caviar, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
Here's the kitty, Ernie. $2,000. I feel like a bootlegger's wife.
Well, finally getting out of Bedford Falls, huh? Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
Hey, George, there's something funny going on over there. Look over there at the bank. It looks like a run.
Wait, now pull over a minute, would you, Ernie?
George, let's not stop. Please, let's go straight to the station.
Oh, no, wait a minute. I better go and see what it is. I'll be right back. Hey, now what is this, Uncle Billy? Is this a holiday? Well, why are the doors locked? There's a crowd out front.
This is a pickle, George.
What happened?
The bank called our loan, and I had to hand out all of our cash.
All of it?
Every last cent of it.
Holy mackerel.
And then I got scared, George.
Open the door, Uncle Billy. Just let him in.
Oh. Hey, about time. We're way out here.
Now, everybody, just remember that this thing isn't... As black as it appears to me.
Where's our money, George?
You're thinking of this place all wrong, Ed. The money's not here. Your money's in people's houses, in the Kennedy house, in the McLaren house, and 100 others. Now, what are you going to do, foreclose on them?
I got $242 in here, and $242 isn't going to break anybody.
All right, Charlie, you'll get your money in 60 days.
60 days?
That's what you agreed to when you bought your shares.
I got my money. Old man Potter's taking over the bank. He'll pay you 50 cents on every dollar.
50 cents on a dollar? Whoa, that's a lot.
Now, hold on, everybody. If Potter gets a hold of your shares, he'll own this building and loan. He's got the bank, he's got the bus line, he's got the department stores, and now he's after us. because he wants us to keep you living in his shacks and paying the kind of rent he decides to charge. Now we can get through this all right, but we've got to have faith in each other.
My husband's out of work. We need the money.
I got doctor bills to pay.
How much do you need? We've got $2,000 from the wedding.
Hey, Mary! I got $2,000 here. This'll tide us over until the bank reopens. All right, Charlie, how much do you need?
$242.
Come on, Charlie, just enough to tide you over.
I'll take $242.
Okay, Uncle Billy. Give Charlie $242. All right, Ed, now how much just to get by?
$20, I suppose.
Now we're talking. Mrs. Thompson, how about you?
But it's your own money, George.
Never mind that now. How much, Mrs. Thompson?
Could I have $17.50?
Oh, bless your heart. Of course you can have it. Uncle Billy, give her $17.50. Now pay it back when you can. All right, who's next?
Look at the clock. Look!
5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3, 2, 1, 6 o'clock! We made it! Lock that door, Uncle Billy. We're still in business!
Bailey Brothers building an... Oh, just a minute. George, there's a call for you.
Look, will you get my wife on the phone? She's probably over at her mother's.
Mrs. Bailey's on the phone.
Oh, I don't want Mrs. Bailey. I want my wife. Oh, Mrs. Bailey. Oh, that is my wife. Mary? Hello. Listen, dear, I'm sorry. What? Come home? What home? 320 Sycamore. Well, what? Whose home is that? The Waldorf Hotel, huh?
That doesn't look like the Waldorf.
Oh, no. Number 320 Sycamore was the old Granville house, the one that George and Mary threw rocks at and made wishes. Mary had prepared the house, including a turkey dinner, romantic decorations, and even a marriage bed.
Welcome home, Mr. Bailey.
We'll all be.
Remember the night we broke the windows in this old house? This is what I wished for.
Darling, you're wonderful.
Yes, sir. That's where they spent their honeymoon. That's where they started their lives together. Mary made the leaky old house a home, while George toiled away at the building and loan office. And Bailey houses started popping up all over the place, mostly owned by people that used to live in Potter's Field. And Potter had had just about enough of that. So after a couple of years, old man Potter decided to call our George into his office.
Sit down, George. Sit down. Have a cigar?
Well, thank you, sir.
The plot thickens. Will George fall into Potter's web? We'll pick up right here in the story tomorrow. So many great parts to today's edition of Mark and Friends. I appreciate the Great News Radio Theater Troupe and their phenomenal rendition of It's a Wonderful Life. CDs will be available in a few weeks. Just mail in a donation stating you want a CD or stop by the Great News Radio Center at Lincoln Square in a couple weeks, and we hope to have them available. Well, we'll continue right where we left off today with the Potter Tempts George scene. Now, I should mention, if you missed a portion of today's broadcast or Monday, Tuesday, or you'll miss it tomorrow or Friday, they are being archived at greatnewsradio.org under our archive programs page. That's greatnewsradio.org. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you, and have a great day and night.